Welcome to another episode of Big Fish Radio. This is Captain Barry, joined with one of the hosts, Mr. Robert Lugowitz, manager here at Fish and Frank's, and Miss Alexandra B. Fishin, a worker here at Fish and Frank's as well. And today on Big Fish Radio, we're going to be talking about Spanish mackerel and how to catch the biggest one you can possibly catch. So what do you have to say, Robert? Where do you want to start with this?
What is a big Spanish mackerel?
Ooh. Yeah, good. That's a really good question. Honestly,
what is a Spanish mackerel?
What is it?
Yeah. A fishy?
It's definitely a fish. It's a pelagic fish here in Southwest Florida.
Oh, okay.
So it's more of an open water species, and it is more seasonal.
Mm-hmm.
They do come into the harbor, but they don't like fresh water, so if it starts to get into the rainy season, they will move more offshore. But as the salinity rises in the winter or in the fall, they'll start to migrate into the harbor for a little while, and then they will disappear again. We get probably about 6 months or so out of the year they are here, and then the rest of the time they're either offshore or they migrate way south down towards the Keys.
Yeah. For here in this area, Robert, like whether it be in the harbor or on the ocean side, what would you say is like a big Spanish?
A true Spanish mackerel,
yes.
A big one would be 4 pounds.
4 pounds. And how many? Is that like about a 25 incher to the fork?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow,
yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm thinking like kingfish barracuda.
No.
They don't get anywhere near that size.
Do they look like them?
Well, yeah, they look very similar.
To a kingfish.
Okay. They're a second cousin to the kingfish. Actually, they're a first cousin to the kingfish. Yeah. King mackerel.
King mackerel, okay. Yes.
I should say king mackerel, because kingfish is a different species, which we call whiting here. And on the East Coast, especially the northeastern seaboard, whiting are called kingfish.
Okay.
And believe it or not, Alex, just to put it in perspective, some serious kingfish fishermen, they use Spanish mackerel for bait for kingfish.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that just gives you like a size comparison. Mm-hmm. Like they will eat Spanish mackerel.
But
yeah, I would agree with what your estimates are on a big Spanish mackerel. A Spanish mackerel 25 inches to the fork, which is going to be around, like you said, 4 or 5 pounds. That's a big Spanish.
It's a giant
wow.
one.
Yeah.
And they do catch some that are bigger in that 5 to 7 pound range around here.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of times it's actually misidentified. It's actually called a cerro mackerel, C-E-R-O.
Cerro.
Which occasionally is here, but it's more often found the Keys and on the Atlantic side.
So people can catch these cerro mackerels, and because they do have dots, I believe,
yep.
And people mistake them as Spanish, but they really were a cerro instead.
Right. Well, even a baby king mackerel, a juvenile king mackerel under 22 inches...
Has
the spots on it too, just like a Spanish mackerel.
God.
What's the secret to telling them apart?
On the dorsal fin,
mm-hmm.
for the difference between a king mackerel and a Spanish mackerel, and I'm going to have this reversed probably, but you raise up the rays on their dorsal fin,
mm-hmm.
and that very first ray on the front on a Spanish mackerel is just white or clear. Versus a king mackerel, it's black.
Okay.
And I might have that reversed, so it's one or the other, but that is the only real way to tell the difference, to be positively ID'd.
Gotcha.
As far as a cerro or cerro mackerel, I have a hard time telling the difference between the ones, but cerro mackerel actually has some more blotches
mm-hmm.
rather than spots.
Mm-hmm.
And then they also have a little bit of a lateral line on them that's a little bit more defined than a Spanish.
Gotcha. And these Spanish mackerels, since you're saying like they're pelagics, they don't really... What a pelagic, when I think of them, they don't sit in a certain spot. They're just constantly moving.
Yeah.
Looking basically to me for the next bait school.
That's pretty much what they do. They eat and move.
They move fast.
Yes.
Like so just to give you an idea of like how to target them, it's not a type of fish that you go... throw an anchor in a spot and hope that they like... I mean, I guess you could. You have to wait for them to come to you, but they're going to be constantly moving. So I would rather be drifting or trolling, something along those lines to cover water, because that's exactly what they're doing and looking for bait fish.
Robert, did you say that first dorsal fin spike was black in the in the king or the Spanish?
In the king mackerel.
Mm. Opposite.
It's the opposite?
Yep, opposite.
So Spanish mackerel.
It's black in the Spanish.
Okay.
Yeah, so. I've definitely seen it's like black, and I think there's a little white on it as well.
Yeah, it has a little white highlight, but the black is predominant versus the other one. It's just white or clear.
Did you just confirm that on Google, Alex?
Yes, Google.
Wow. So Google. No,
that's awesome. Wow. And I thought I might have it backwards, but at least I was in the right ball game, which is not too bad.
Gotcha.
You know, but the like you said, going out and trolling for Spanish mackerel or drifting for them or casting to them, because a lot of times when we're drifting, we are casting, sometimes putting some live baits out the back. But the main thing is that you're usually almost always looking for bird activity, bait on the surface, and you'll find them usually in proximity to sometimes weed lines or around artificial reefs of some kind.
Gotcha.
But that's because that's where the food source is usually at.
That's where the baits will hang, exactly. That's where they'll be on some sort of structure, and Spanish mackerel will come and just blast them away. And they're not really solo fish. You're going to find multiples, especially in the same, kind of like speckled trout. You'll find them the same size fish in those schools. They're not going to be mixed as much.
Right. But there is one little trick to it, just like fishing for trout sometimes. Like if you want the largest of that Spanish mackerel, and it's hard to do when you've got a fish that's constantly blitzing on the surface, which means they're coming up and frothing the surface, feeding on bait fish.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's very difficult to figure out an area where they're at, but honestly, slow trolling a slightly larger bait around the perimeter is going to be your better shot of catching the larger of those Spanish mackerel.
Yeah, 100%.
You know, so I mean, I would be more apt to, if I'm drifting through an area where they're really concentrated, I may be casting to the far outer edges of them with a large spoon instead of throwing, say, a half ounce or a 3/4 ounce spoon. I'm going to probably throw something like 1, even up to as big as 2 ounces.
It's basically like a kingfish spoon is what you're basically saying. Yeah. Is this your preferred tactic to catch the biggest Spanish mackerel you know of?
No, my favorite way would be honestly to troll around for them.
With what type of lure?
I would be using like a big king spoon.
Just a spoon with a single hook?
Well, I'm going to do usually 2 or 3 lures.
Okay.
I'm going to use a bigger king spoon or a cedar plug, depending on my speed and areas where I'm fishing.
I've never caught like a Spanish on a cedar plug.
Like a 4-inch cedar plug.
That works well for Spanish?
Uh-huh.
Wow, okay.
Especially if they got a little bit of size to them.
Yeah.
And then I'm also going to probably troll something like a... I'm going to probably go with a bigger bomber or a bigger Yozuri, something in like the 5 or 6 inch range.
Yeah.
Something that's going to dive down 3 to 6 feet on its own without any help whatsoever.
Gotcha.
And then I'm also going to troll something a little bit deeper, like either one of those big king spoons. It's probably going to be my more apt to do a king spoon on like a number 1 or a number 2 planer, which is going to get that down about 10 to 12 feet.
Do you have a color? Because then those spoons come in different colors. Do you have a favorite color
selection?
Nah, I'm going
to do silver.
Gotcha.
Just shiny. Shiny is all get-go. The problem that you have trolling a big hard bait for Spanish mackerel or king mackerel for that matter is that you've got to be prepared for it to punch holes in that lure and screw it up. Exactly. And those lures get expensive. You know, you're talking anywhere from $8 to $20 per lure. And if you only catch one fish and it punches a hole in it, you got to examine that lure as soon as you land it. And I actually carry clear nail polish with me. And I will put clear nail polish
on your nails?
Over those holes.
Oh, I'm sorry, on the holes of the lure.
Yeah,
sorry.
No, I'm not trying to do the nails for males or anything like that and look all pretty out there on the
water.
You
bring a file too with you, Robert?
No.
Oh, okay.
You do, because you sharpen hooks all the time.
I do.
Oh.
Yeah, for my hooks.
Uh-huh.
And my black nail polish. What? Sorry.
Yeah, you know, the thing is that using that clear nail polish, you can actually patch up those holes in your bait.
Yeah.
And at least salvage them where you can use them several more times during that course of that trip.
I got you.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, with these big plugs, especially like the divers, do you run a piece of wire or do you run it straight with like mono or fluoro?
Honestly, I'm gonna probably usually just run straight 60 or 80 pound mono.
Wow, that's ballsy. Like, I don't, with a $20 lure just flashing away and just get snipped just like that.
Yeah.
You'll do it?
Yeah.
Man.
Now, the reason why, though, is because, like any of your mackerel family, whether it's a wahoo, king mackerel, Spanish, any of those, even barracuda, for example, you know, all these fish are what they call a slash and eat fish.
Yes.
So they actually prefer to come up and cut the tail of that bait fish off. They take away the engine, basically, and then they'll swing back around and pick up that damaged bait fish.
Yeah, Alex, if you...
I think I saw a barracuda do that. I saw a barracuda do that.
Barracudas do that, and like same with Spanish. If you have like a greenback on or a threadfin, you'll notice sometimes, like they don't come and inhale a bait like a snook would.
Mm-hmm.
They come and they'll, like, just like Robert's saying, slash the bait, especially around the tail, and like cut it in half. And then you, like, sometimes you just reel it in. You're like, I felt the hit. I got a bite. And you reel it in. There's only half a bait on there. But if you left it in that area, they would have come back, circled around, and picked up the rest because they know that bait fish is basically done. It can't go anywhere at that point. So that's how they feed, which is pretty interesting.
Right.
So go ahead.
Sometimes with trolling, if your reaction time is quick enough, you see that rod get whacked. If you open up the bail or put it onto free spool with a lever drag reel, you start letting that line out after you get that hit and let it feed back a little bit. They'll come back around and re-hit that bait again.
That's
a big trick for bill fishermen, because billfish do that, where they don't, they're not a slash and cut thing, but they come up and they actually smack the baits with their bill, stun it, and then they do a big circle and come back around to find that wounded bait fish. So if you're trolling along at 4 to 6 miles an hour, you've already pulled that bait way past their strike zone. But if you can react quick enough and just put it into freeze pool and let that bait just fall back, they'll swing back around and grab it, and you'll actually see your line jump where you can close the bail back up or flip your lever drag back up and engage it and set the hook on them.
Interesting. So what's been your biggest Spanish, would you say, that you've caught?
Maybe 4 pounds.
4 pounds,
maybe.
Right out there. Yeah.
Yeah. Right in there on that 25-inch range.
Yeah.
Wow, you know, my biggest ones were zeros over on the other coast one time, and then the captain bursted my bubble and said, no, there's zero mackerel. I'm like, dang it.
I thought I knew personal best.
Yeah, you know, I was super stoked because we were catching like 6 and 7 pounders over there.
Oh, my gosh.
And we caught, I don't know, a dozen of them. We kept calling them Spanish, and he finally got annoyed enough where he corrected us.
He said, guys, it's zeros.
You guys from the other coast, what do you know? You know, so.
And you work at a bait shop?
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, a lot of people will use that little piece of steel in front of it, and you don't need to use much steel. You know, 6 inches of wire really is all you need in front of a lure if you're apprehensive about losing it.
Just enough, so if they grab the front of the head, that's all you need, like that 3 to 6 inches, that's all you need to protect the lure. So.
And if I'm drifting or slow trolling on natural bait, whether it's a live bait or a dead bait, I will use steel for that. Because generally with a live bait or a natural bait, you tend to sometimes troll a little bit slower. And because they are in groups, they start to get that wolf pack mentality or gang mentality, where one takes a shot at it, but 3 come up right behind them trying to take a shot at it. And it's not unusual to lose that bait.
Yeah, I get you.
Which is the number one mistake people make when they're casting to Spanish mackerel. You know, because they will hit a swivel.
Yes, 100%.
Your line-to-line knot, because they're so focused on feeding that anything that moves, they tend to bite.
You know what's also another one, too? When you hook one and your line is cutting through the water, right where your line is meeting the water, it's making a little splash or a little wake as the fish is running off with your line. Another Spanish mackerel will see that and come and nick your line, whether it be your braid or your main line, whatever you're using, and cut you off that way, too.
Absolutely.
It doesn't even have to be hardware that they're going to hit. They can hit your line because it's going at Mach 5 when you first hook up with those guys. But go ahead.
Exactly. You know, so, I mean, I don't even know where I was going, but, you know, when casting and retrieving for Spanish mackerel, one of the biggest mistakes that people make is they try to jig it or twitch it, whether they're throwing a bucktail at them or a spoon, and that's how you get bit off and broke off a lot.
That pause is enough for them to get it down and cut you immediately.
Yep.
Yeah.
So retrieve at a very steady retrieve, whether it's fast or whether it's slow, but it's got to be that consistent, steady retrieve. It's one of the few instances of species of fish where I don't tell people to use pause as part of their action, and this is one of the instances where you got to just reel.
Yeah.
Just that's all you have to do is reel.
Yeah, and reel. I find it just don't even reel steady. They're more of a reaction fish, so the faster you can go,
yep,
the better chances you have of hooking them, especially with artificial.
Trying to get away, and yep. I do like using a single hook lure more so than I do trebles. Like treble hooks, because you actually seem to land a lot more Spanish mackerel with a single hook than you do with a treble hook.
Yeah. Interesting. You think with Robert's knowledge, you know where to go and you can apply his trolling technique, Alex?
I'm hungry right now, so I'm wondering if they're good eating or not.
They actually are.
Yeah.
They're way underrated as far as a food valued fish. You know, the thing that scares people is because they are a mackerel, they do have a fairly good bloodline in them.
Okay.
But if you cut that bloodline out, they've actually got some very white fillets to them.
Yeah, if you eat them the day of, especially. Like, I think, like you said, they get a bad rap because when people think of kingfish, they're more of an oily gray meat.
Yeah.
Spanish mackerel, when you cut that bloodline out, it's beautiful, white, non-fishy meat. And it's, to me, it's amazing. Especially if you eat it fresh. I mean, any fish that you start freezing and all that is not that great, but...
Well, and that's especially true with any of your mackerel family.
True. Very
whether,
true.
Whether it's a Spanish or a Wahoo or a King mackerel, freezing that fish does something where it changes the muscle structure, where it breaks it down a little bit, so it goes from being a really firm, nice, white, non-fishy fillet... Mm-hmm. To more mushy, more grainy kind of. Really doesn't change the flavor as much as it does the texture of it.
Yeah.
So usually what I tell people, because the bag limit on Spanish mackerel is ridiculous. It's like, I think...
12 or 15 per person?
It's like 15, I think, per person. Which is dumb. But catching the few that you're planning on eating that day... Or the next day is really all you need, because by the time you freeze that fish, unless you just really don't have any sense of taste on your palate, then go ahead. But if you want to truly appreciate that fish for what it is, just keep yourself a day or 2 days worth of meals, but make sure they're kept fresh and not frozen.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. And, this is one of the shows where I think we're going to have two different opinions on how to catch the biggest Spanish or the biggest fish. In this case, it's a Spanish mackerel, and I think they all are going to work. So my take on Spanish mackerel is the biggest one I ever caught, believe it or not, was on the Sunshine Skyway Pier.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like a lot of big Spanish hang around there because there's so much bait. And the way I actually caught it was, you know, like those big spoons. I believe they're called, you carry in the shop, they're the top part, they're like heavy and thick, and then the top is like shaved. I think it's called a Castmaster.
Yes.
It's like a shaved head, and that thing, it's because it has like a shaved head or angled head, it cuts through the water, and you can even like jig it. I know you just said you don't like to recommend jigging a spoon or jigging any lure for a Spanish because they'll cut you off, right?
Right.
I remember the first time I went out there, that's all I had with me. And I was seeing people catch Spanish mackerel, like, of average size in that 15 to 20 inch range. And I was throwing that Castmaster and just jigging it in that head. They have strong currents, especially on the new and full moon phases. And I was catching these huge Spanish that I had 20-pound mainline and, like, you know, I wasn't even using wire. And they were, like, thick. Like, when the Spanish get over 20 inches, they start thickening out. They're not like skinny, you know, that you see in the 15 to 20 inch range. And I caught a solid 5 or 6, and I was just taken aback of how big and meaty they were. And it was as simple as just jigging a spoon in the rough current out there. So,
you had a question about something with the tides and the moon. Oh, gotcha. So the tides and the moon can play a role in it, though.
Yeah.
You know, with making the tides stronger.
Mm-hmm.
It can concentrate your bait into smaller areas, mm-hmm. which can actually make it easier to find your Spanish mackerel at times, rather than on some of your slower tides. That bait will spread out a lot farther,
mm-hmm.
and make targeting that species a little bit more tricky at times. So yeah. It's one of the, you know, handful of fish where I really like to find a good moving tide to really go look for them, because then I'm not hopscotching all over the place where it's just one Spanish here, two Spanish here. You know, they're just, they're hopscotched all over the place. Usually you get that stronger current going. That's why I try to look for some of those tide lines and stuff like that. You're, you know, you got everything concentrated into a smaller area where you stand a better chance.
Exactly, yeah. And that day, I remember the bait of choice, or the bait that was all under the pier, were these huge thread fins, like the ones that are the like tarpon,
right,
tarpon size, the ones that are like 6-7 inches long. So if you had a cast net or, you know, sabiki that day, those big, big Spanish were slashing through them, and you could also have put out one of those big thread fins on with like a, basically a kingfish rig.
Right.
Very thin wire. You have a nose. A kingfish rig is basically, you could find them prepackaged. They have a single J hook, which you hook through like the nose of the bait. And then from that main hook, that J hook, you have like a treble, a stinger hook is what they call it.
Right.
And you can stick that back in the bait around the tail or, you know, the midsection. So the bait is there swimming freely. And when the fish comes up to swipe at it, if he hits the tail, he'll get hooked with the stinger hook. If he gets the head, you got the J hook in there so you can hook up. But that's another way, you know, I would highly recommend trying for a big Spanish. Use a big bait like a big thread fin.
Right.
And for me, that fishes mostly from shore. The best way for me to find them from shore is to look for big schools of bait fish.
Right.
No, not around structure.
Yeah, structure, I mean, is okay, but if there's schools of bait, that's what's going to bring the Spanish to them, to you, or yeah, that's how you know they're around.
And generally speaking, for land-based anglers, it's going to be more along the intercoastal, ICW, whatever you want to call it, whether it's, you know, for an example, like the Skyway Pier up in Tampa, the Placida Pier out there by Boca Grande, anywhere where you're closer to higher salinity.
Yes.
Okay.
And yes, also off the beaches, the better your chances are of getting them. Even like Sharkey's Pier is a very, very notorious place for catching Spanish. Them up there in Venice or off the jetties there in Nokomis, because those Spanish mackerel do like a higher salinity type situation along with their food source.
I second that 100%. They love salinity, these Spanish. Once any bit of fresh water comes into our harbor in like that May, because they're thick in the harbor in that April, May, and then first week of June, or until we get those rains, the summer rains. Once that comes, you don't see them for months, because the rest of the harbor is all brackish and dark for the next couple months following those heavy rains. So.
And for casting from shore, there's a lure in there called a gotcha.
Yes.
It's just a steel tube.
Oh, yeah.
With the
okay.
hooks coming off of it. It's got treble hooks, and it's also got single hooks on it. Whichever one you pick, there is no one color that's better than another. But here's a history trivia with you, because I know we're cutting it close. Right. But
I was going to say, I'm glad you mentioned that, because if we didn't mention gotcha on a Spanish mackerel show, that's like a big no-no. Yeah. But go ahead. That's taboo.
It's kind of sacrilegious, kind of.
Yeah.
You know, 25 years ago on the west coast of Florida, the number one Spanish mackerel lure was a McDonald's straw. Seriously. They were fatter around, and they had white, yellow, and a red line on them. That's it. But they were a fatter straw, and what they would do is cut them into about 4-inch pieces and slide a leader on, a hook at the end of their leader, slide the 4-inch straw over that with a little sinker that would slide down inside of it like a bullet sinker, and cast that out and just reel it in fast. And it was to the point where in Southwest Florida, you could not get a McDonald's straw without purchasing
a drink or something. Because they're like, that's funny. That's some trivia, Spanish mackerel trivia for everybody.
Yeah. So, just kind of neat.
Well, I hope you guys in Radioland and learn something new today and catch some big Spanish mackerel. They are very tasty fish. And thank you guys for being on the show and telling us your tactics, Robert. And very good questions, Alex, as always. And until next show, we'll see you then, and you can catch me on tarponworld.com. We'll see you then.